folks. This is Scott Weingart, and you're listening to the MCrit Podcast. So let's get right into it. If you've already listened to part one of a PhD in electrocardiograms, then you know of Dr. Stephen Smith. He writes an EKG blog. He is an incredible teacher and researcher on electrocardiograms and emergency medicine. And this is part two. Today, we're going to discuss left bundle branch block and whether it really should have us giving fibrinolytics or taking the patient to immediate PCI. Let's get right into it. Let's talk left bundle branch block, because I will tell you the source of much frustration in my life, which is currently our EMS system activates an entire pathway of cath labs and cardiologists based on the presence of a left bundle branch block in the setting of chest pain with nothing else to go on, no other additional criteria. What are your thoughts on left bundle branch block?
Well, I can go on for a long time on this if you want.
I'll take as much as you're willing to give.
Okay. So let's just go back way, way back in history and think of why left bundle branch block is gained its reputation as being so difficult to diagnose myocardial infarction in left bundle branch block. It comes from the days when we didn't have any way of finding out if someone had had an MI in the past, an old MI. On the EKG with normal QRS, you'd look for Q waves. Well, that was pretty good. But you can't find Q waves on left bundle branch block. It destroys Q waves and makes it impossible to look for old MI. So back in those old days, the EKG was important in diagnosing old MI because they didn't have MUGA scans and they didn't have echocardiography and they didn't have sestamibi scans. They didn't know if someone had had an old MI or not except by looking at the EKG, and left bundle branch block obscured that. So it got this long reputation of not being able of obscuring myocardial infarction. Well, then we got into the reperfusion era where finding old MI was no longer the issue. The issue was, does the patient have an acute MI? More than that, not do they have an acute MI, do they have a coronary occlusion? Because that's what we emergency physicians have to act on quickly. And but this old perception persisted. So what's the sensitivity of left bundle branch block and for occlusion as opposed to myocardial infarction? Well, it's a difficult study to do because myocardial infarction or coronary occlusion in the presence of left bundle branch block is a fairly rare event anyway. I've compiled all the data on left bundle branch block that I can find, all the studies that I've looked through, and it appears that approximately 2-4% of people who present to the ED with chest pain and either new or old left bundle branch block have acute coronary occlusion, about 2-4%. So it's a very tiny group, very small number. So you got to ask then, why did we get to this point where we give thrombolytics or reperfusion therapy to everybody with ischemic symptoms and left bundle branch block or new left bundle branch block? Well, it's because there were thrombolytic trials back in the 80s where they enrolled patients who had ischemic symptoms and left bundle branch block in the thrombolytic trials. And those who got the thrombolytics had less mortality than those who got placebo. But they didn't do any subgroup analysis on that. They didn't find out which patients with left bundle branch block did better. They didn't look at any ECG characteristics of those patients who did better. So to lump all left bundle branch block together just because of a decreased mortality when you give them all thrombolytics doesn't mean that you found the patients with left bundle branch block who do improve with reperfusion therapy. Fortunately, Scarbosa came along in 1996 and showed us that there is a way to diagnose myocardial infarction on left bundle branch block, and that's with concordant ST elevation, that is ST elevation that goes in the same direction as the QRS, or she gave 2 points out of the three necessary to make the diagnosis to excessive discordant ST elevation. Let me explain that. Leads V1 to V4 in left bundle branch block have a negative QRS, and because the ST and T wave are always opposite the QRS in a normal left bundle branch block, they always have ST elevation in V1 to V4. So how do you diagnose ST elevation MI in the presence of left bundle branch block when you expect to have ST elevation on the patient who doesn't have an MI? Well, it's if there's too much discordant ST elevation. In other words, it goes the opposite direction of the QRS too much. Well, she defined that as 5 millimeters, an absolute number, 5 millimeters. The other problem, so I find that problematic because EKGs don't go by absolute numbers, they go by proportions. The ST segment is proportional to the QRS. Everything's proportional. And that just makes electrophysiological sense. If you have a very deep S wave in V2, it goes down 70 millimeters, you should expect that that discordant ST elevation should be more than 5 millimeters. And indeed, in every case I've ever seen of left bundle mesh block where there's a large S wave, there's a tall ST segment, and it reaches higher than 5 millimeters, which was Scarbus's cutoff for an acute MI, although, again, her point system did not actually make you capable of making the diagnosis. It wasn't specific enough. So she didn't use proportion. The other thing Scarbussa did was she used a diagnosis of myocardial infarction as her endpoint. Well, myocardial infarction includes both STEMI and non-STEMI. We don't need to send someone to the cath lab for non-STEMI. We don't need to give them thrombolytics for non-STEMI. And yet she used CKMB as her outcome. The majority of myocardial infarctions are not occlusions, but what we need to find is occlusions. So that's where the Scarbussa criteria help, but they're not good enough because they don't look at occlusion. They look at NSTEMI or STEMI as an endpoint, CKMB, and they don't use proportion. So, as I was saying before, I've done this study where I'm still doing measurements on the EKGs. We've done one group of measurements. We're finding another person to do a second group so we have inter-rater reliability and can get this thing published. I have presented it at three different conferences, SAEM twice and American Heart Association once. And what we've shown is that for coronary occlusion, concordant ST elevation or excessively discordant ST elevation in V1 to V4, as defined by an ST to S ratio of greater than 0.2, in other words, ST segment elevation at the J point divided by the depth of the S wave, if that's greater than 0.2, it was very sensitive and specific for left bundle branch block compared to a control group. Let me just tell you about the control group. That ratio, ST elevation to S wave depth, in people who have left bundle branch block without coronary occlusion averages about 0.11. But if it's greater, so 0.2 is quite a high ratio. And many of those patients who were 0.2 had 0.3, 0.4, 0.5 ratios. Well, that's a long-winded explanation to left bundle mass block.
No, that's fantastic. Let me see if I could clarify and you tell me if I'm getting it right or wrong. So okay. Scarbussa was certainly better than just acting on left bundle alone. But right. Even that might not necessarily be enough for a couple reasons. First of all, they weren't necessarily looking at what we want, which is coronary occlusion. They were looking at all NSTEMI patients as their endpoint.
NSTEMI and STEMI. Anybody who had positive CKMB.
There you go. Now, beyond that, for emergency physicians who don't have an insane interest in EKGs, the criteria is usually difficult to remember. And it seemed unnecessarily so, because at least the way Scarbussa wrote it, the only ones that would get you an actual diagnosis by the revised point system was a concordant change in the ST segment.
That's correct. Of 1 millimeter in just one lead.
So that's one way of making it easy, but you're saying even that's not accurate enough. And you would add to that concordant ST change, a disproportionate elevation in V1 to V4, and you actually quantify it not as an absolute number, but as a proportion of the S wave. So if the S wave is 60, and we take a fifth of that, we'd say if the ST elevations are greater than 12 millimeters, that's a problem.
That's correct. So Scarbussa's criteria, it turns out, are not very sensitive. They're also not very specific, but in particular, they've been criticized for their sensitivity. Why is that? Two reasons. Everybody who has evaluated them has used CKMB as an outcome. Okay, we don't apply that standard to EKGs with a normal QRS, do we? We don't say that, geez, the EKG is so insensitive for STEMI, therefore, we're going to send everybody to the cath lab who doesn't have ST elevation. No, we use the outcome criteria as occlusion, as needing reperfusion therapy, as needing thrombolytics or immediate PCI, right? So Every study that's evaluated the scarlet letter criteria finds its sensitivity is for myocardial infarction is 20 to 40%. Well, that's true. Its sensitivity for myocardial infarction as diagnosed by biomarkers is 20 to 40%. We're not looking for those patients. We're looking for the ones with occlusion. Its sensitivity for occlusion is far higher, maybe 60 to 70% or better. Now, if you add this proportional, and remember, Scarbosa's criteria doesn't even, you don't even get to use the 5 millimeter absolute criteria because that only gives you 2 points. But if you use the proportional criteria, then there are many cases that have, say, 4 millimeters of ST elevation in V2, but only have a 12 millimeter S wave. That 4 millimeters does not meet even Scarbosa's 2 point criteria, but its ratio, 4 millimeters over 12, is 0.33. Just one lead requires a ratio like that. And then you've got ST elevation myocardial infarction. So that's why this new proportional, excessively discordant ST elevation by proportional measure is both more sensitive and more specific than Scarbosa's criteria. And it's sensitive for coronary occlusion, though it is still not sensitive for myocardial infarction as diagnosed by biomarkers. As we know, the EKG is never sensitive for EKG for myocardial infarction as diagnosed by biomarkers, and that's why we have biomarkers. That's why we use troponin. We can diagnose a myocardial infarction easily using troponin. What we emergency physicians need is to know right away whether the patient needs to go to the cath lab, and for that, the Scarbosa criteria, the modified Scarbosa criteria, is very good.
I love it. Let's make sure we're getting this where the rubber meets the road. So you're the attending on shift in the ED. Patient comes in. They have chest pain. It's typical. It sounds good, but they're not writhing. They're not giving you that sixth sense that they're going to crump on you. And all they have is a left bundle with none of the criteria we've mentioned, either Scarbosa or the new ones you're putting forth. They just have a left bundle. You don't have an old EKG. Are you sending that patient to the cath lab?
I'm not sending that patient to the cath lab.
They're going to be admitted, right?
They're going to be admitted. Maybe I'll do serial EKGs to make sure they don't develop Scarbosa criteria or develop have some other developing abnormalities, but I do not send those patients to cath lab. In fact, the literature shows that emergency physicians and cardiologists across the spectrum also don't follow those guidelines because in their experience, they know every time they've sent these patients to cath lab, it's been a negative, right? So from their experience, they throw up their arms and say, I'm not going to send this person to cath lab. I've done it too many times, and it didn't show anything. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I'd absolutely agree with that. And we even the ones we would call our interventionalists about, they would not take those patients to the lab.
That's right. Because in their experience, too, as I said, only 2 to 4% of patients who come to the ED with ischemic symptoms and have left bundle mass block, even new left bundle mass block, have acute coronary occlusion that needs to be opened right now. Now, a much higher percentage will have a non-STEMI, but that doesn't need to go to the cath lab right now.
So where are we left now? Well, from speaking to Dr. Smith, we know that all of this hullabaloo about left bundle branch block being the same as a STEMI was a conflation of the old evidence that left bundle branch block obscures Q wave analysis. And in the era where MIs were divided between Q wave and non-Q wave MI, that might have mattered. We're out of that era now, but the legacy of it continues in the guidelines from organizations like the American Heart Association and ASEP. A new or presumed new left bundle branch block alone probably shouldn't have you giving fibrinolytics or taking the patient to immediate PCI, unless their clinical condition, regardless of their EKG, is sending you down that path. Left bundle branch block alone is probably not the equivalent of a STEMI. Now, if you look at that EKG with left bundle branch block and the patient has either ST changes that are concordant, meaning going in the same direction as the predominance of the QRS of greater than 1 millimeter in any lead in a patient with a left bundle branch block should petrify you. That is the equivalent of a STEMI. Or the new modified criteria suggested by Dr. Smith, which are in leads V1 through V4, if the ST deviation is greater than or equal to a fifth, 0.2, of the S wave, that also should prompt treating these patients as if they were STEMIs. In the absence of those two criteria, you do not, in the opinions of Dr. Smith and myself, need to give fibrinolytics or take these patients to the lab. You do definitely want to admit these patients to the hospital. Patients with new or old left bundle branch blocks have a higher incidence of coronary artery disease, and they very well might be having an end-STEMI in front of you. So admit them, do serial EKGs, do serial enzymes, give them their aspirin. They are potentially sick cardiac patients, but they do not need to be rushed to the lab or get fibrinolytics. Now, this is just some joker talking, that being me, with some incredibly smart master of EKGs, that would be Dr. Smith, but we are not the AHA. We are not ASEP's clinical policy committee. So don't do this just because I'm saying it. What you want to do is you want to sit down with your ED group and you want to sit down with your interventionalists and cardiologists in the hospital and parse through this and decide as an institution whether you're going to follow the national guidelines or not. And then if you know anyone who's doing these national guidelines, like if you run into Jeff Tavis, say, hey, let's address this. This is really bad stuff. When an entire EMS system as big as New York is activating the machinery that is automatic cath lab notifications in many hospitals because of left bundle branch box alone, that's probably something that needs to be addressed. Come June, I'm going to visit the folks at the ASEP Clinical Policy Committee. I'm going to be sure to be mentioning this issue to them and hopefully spurring them to reanalyze this literature and potentially change their recommendations. So let's leave it there. I cannot tell you how much admiration I have for Dr. Stephen Smith. He is the PhD in EKGs, if you go to his blog. That is where you will take a mastery of this subject and go even one step further to potentially being better than some of the folks that are allegedly overreading your EKGs. So check it out. The links to all this are in the show notes. This old Scarbosa criteria, the new Smith modifications of the Scarbosa criteria, a lot of the literature that was the origin of these recommendations from groups like the AHA is in the show notes. So check it out, and I hope to talk with you soon. Bye-bye.